O Brahmanas, the opulence of the king was so enchanting that the denizens of heaven aspired for it. But because he was absorbed in the service of the Lord, nothing could satisfy him except the Lord's service. Please repeat, O Brahmanas.
O Brahmanas. O Brahmanas.
The opulence of the king.
The opulence of the king.
Was so enchanting.
Was so enchanting.
That the denizens of heaven aspired for it.
That the denizens of heaven aspired for it.
But because he was absorbed. In the service of the Lord.
In the service of the Lord.
Nothing could satisfy him except the Lord's service.
Nothing could satisfy him except the Lord's service.
Okay, if I could interrupt a moment. So, we have one or two devotees that are living new to our Sangha. So, at this time, we need everyone who's especially directly connected by Skype to please mute themselves so there's no background noise. We want to very much thank Nari for coming in at no notice like this. Giving Srimad Bhagavatam, so let us all lend our aims and respectful ear to him giving his class. So, Prabhupada, if we could all please mute at this time. And,
Ramananji, if you'd be kind enough to read the purports, because I haven't even read it, so I'd like to listen while you read.
Sure, I can do that. No problem. Okay. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are two things in the world which can satisfy living beings. When one is materially engrossed, he is satisfied only by sense gratification. But when one is liberated from the conditions of the material mode, he is satisfied only by rendering loving service for the satisfaction of the Lord. This means that the living being is constitutionally a servitor and not one who is served, being illusioned by the conditions of the external energy. One falsely thinks himself to be the served, but actually he is not served. He is servant of the senses like lust, desire, anger, avarice, pride, madness, and intolerance. When one is in his proper senses by attainment of spiritual knowledge, he realizes that he is not the master of the material world, but is only a servant of the senses. At the same time, he begs for the service of the Lord and thus becomes happy without being illusioned by so-called material happiness. Maharaj Yudhisthira was one of the liberated souls, and therefore for him there was no pleasure in a vast kingdom, good wife, obedient brothers, happy subjects, and prosperous world. Just a moment. Okay. These blessings automatically follow for a pure devotee, even though a devotee does not aspire for them. The example set herein is exactly suitable. It is said that one who is hungry is never satisfied by anything other than food. The whole material world is full of hungry living beings. The hunger is not for good food, shelter, or sense gratification. The hunger is for the spiritual atmosphere. Due to ignorance only, they think that this world is dissatisfied because there is not sufficient food, shelter, defense, and objects of sense gratification. This is called illusion. When the living being is hungry for spiritual satisfaction, he is misrepresented by material hunger. But the foolish leaders cannot see that even the people who are most sumptuously, materially satisfied, are still hungry. And what is their hunger and poverty? This hunger is actually spiritual food, spiritual shelter, spiritual defense, and spiritual sense gratification. These can be obtained in the association of the Supreme Spirit, Lord Krishna, and therefore one who has them cannot be attracted by the so-called food, shelter, defense, and sense gratification of the material world, even if they are relished by the denizens of the heavenly planet. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita 8:16, it is said by the Lord that even in the topmost planet of the universe, namely Brahmaloka, where the duration of life is multiplied by millions of years by Earth calculation, one cannot satisfy his hunger. Such hunger can be satisfied only when the living being is situated in immortality, which is attained in the spiritual sky, far, far above Brahmaloka, in the association of Lord Mukunda, the Lord who rewards his devotees transcendental pleasure of liberation. Okay, I'll go ahead and mute myself.
Okay. Oops. When I lost the page here. I'm on my iPad. Okay. Timte kama suraspraha mukunda manaso dvija adhijaror mutang raja kuditasya yatetre. Om Gana Timirandasya Gananjana Sulakaya Chakshor Un Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Interesting that Prabhupada says when one is materially engrossed, he is satisfied only by sense gratification. So we have to be careful to read this in its context, because in reality, we are not satisfied by sense gratification. It's natural that the living entity, because as stated in Shastra, Ananda Mayo Bhyasyat, that the pleasure, the desire to seek pleasure is constitutional, is a constitutional quality of the living entity. We read about the soul one of the first things we understand about the soul is that the soul is Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha, which means that it is eternal, it is full of knowledge, it is always in a state of pleasure, and vigraha, it has transcendental form. So actually, we see that all of these aspects of the soul, when the living entity is in the material world, he's somehow trying to experience our original nature or to be in our constitutional position. Sat, of course, meaning eternal. And in the material world, everything ends, everything is temporary, everything is ephemeral. So we see that in every way, no one wants to die. Everyone is hoping somehow, as stated by Yudhishthira, Ahanyahani bhutani gachchantiha yamalayam, shisha stavaram ichchanti, kim achcharyam atakparam. You know, he says how day after day, ahanyahani bhutani, day after day, the living entities gachchanti are going, gachchantiha yamalayam. He sees that they're all rushing into the hands of Yamaraj, that they're all facing death. Shisha Stavram Ichchanti. Shisha, which means all of them or the rest of them, Shisha Stavram, a permanence or stability, Ichchanti, or desiring. Kimachcharya Matakparam. What is more wonderful than this? What is more amazing that we see everywhere, in every situation, humans, insects, birds, fish, everywhere we see the living entities are all being born and they're all dying. But somehow, because of our eternal nature, we are somehow thinking, I'm not going to die. Because in reality, we're not going to die. The soul is, in fact, eternal. But because it appears as if this body is going through a state of atrophy, which in fact it is, we do everything possible to try to stop that from happening because of the false identity with a physical body. It's not natural for the soul to get old. It's not natural for the soul to die because, in fact, it really doesn't. And we see the huge cosmetic industry where people spend practically all they have in many cases in order to keep the body looking young, appearing young through cosmetics, through surgery, through clothing. Sometimes people get old. It almost looks funny. You'll see someone in their, as I see it in the wedding industry, people in their 80s and older, 90s, they try to dress as if they're young. They put on toupees. They dye their hair to try to hide the fact that they're apparently aging, because it is in fact totally unnatural for the soul. So anyway, that's sat, chit, and knowledge. Gosh, we start, our parents start training, giving us some sort of knowledge as a young child, training in all different ways. Then we go to school, practically spend a whole huge section of our life in school, preschool, elementary school, junior high school, college, beyond college, and then what they call the school of hard knocks, to try to get education, to try to understand. But in reality, all knowledge is there within the soul. It's the chit feature of the soul that knowledge is there. We gain knowledge, spiritual knowledge, which is very important. But as one of the acharyas, I can't remember, I think it was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, states that even the knowledge that we gain in spiritual life is really kind of a temporary knowledge, to know that we're not the body, the soul is transmigrating. It's all ultimately to bring us to the point of understanding Krishna, which we've got to perceive in every situation of life. There's a beautiful verse in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. Etavat eva jigyasam tattva jigyasunatmanaha anvaya vitarekabhyam yatsyat sarvatra sarvada. This is, I believe, the third verse of the, anyway, really, really early on in the Bhagavatam, where it's stating that etavat eva jigyasam tatva jigyasunatmanaha, that one who wants to understand the absolute truth, tatva jigyasu atmanaha, one who really wants to understand real spiritual knowledge, that he has to try to understand or see or gain knowledge in all situations, directly and indirectly, whether we're meditating upon Krishna or the form of Krishna or understanding about the spiritual world, but also within the material world, in any situation that we are in, seeing Krishna's hand playing in everything. I think it was Mother, who was saying that in class the other day? I guess it was Mother Irmala was saying that we don't really see a difference between the material and spiritual. It's all Krishna's energy. And ultimately, the Vaishnava doesn't make a distinction between material and spiritual, because once we see that it is all Krishna's energy, all under Krishna's direction. And actually, the material energy is in fact eternal, though its manifestations are changing. In every situation of life, our point is to see and perceive Krishna and to advance spiritually. So anyway, there's a certain type of academic spiritual knowledge that one gains in the beginning. Krishna says, Gyanam teham savigyanam idang vaksham sheshata yaj gyatva nehabuyon yaj gyatim yava vashishate, that we understand knowledge noumenally and phenomenally. In other words, we're understanding the spiritual aspect, material aspects of this material world and the spiritual world. But then Krishna says that once we understand both of these in truth, then Gyatavima Vishishate, there really isn't anything more to understand, because we come to the point of understanding Krishna, falling back into our relationship with Krishna, and once again become covered over. Because being covered, being in illusion, is actually the constitutional position of the soul. There's only a sort of an interim period where we are not in illusion. In other words, in the spiritual world, everyone is under the influence of yoga maya, and that yoga maya has to be there in order for the living entity to have a close or an intimate or a meaningful relationship with Krishna. As soon as we perceive or understand him as God in fullness, then that destroys or that cripples the intimacy of any type of relationship. So in the spiritual world, in one form or another, everyone is under the influence of Krishna's yoga maya. And when we are thrown into the material world, the two influences of maya are akshepatmika and prakshepatmika. The avaranatmika is covering, prakshepatmika is the throwing potency. We're thrown within this material world. That's the prakshepatmika. In avaranatmika, we become covered over again by maya, but a different type of maya. It's also illusory, but it's not the constitutional illusion which the soul is under within the spiritual world. We become covered by the material nature and misidentify with our physical bodies and have all types of false relationships. They're not real relationships. In the spiritual world, they are eternal real relationships, but they are covered by Krishna's yoga maya. So, and anyway, my point is that in both cases, we are covered by illusion. That is the reality, and it is constitutional to be covered. But it is a perverted type of covering within the material world. But in the process of moving from the material illusion or Mahamaya to our constitutional position of yoga maya, that there is a type of knowledge that is important for one to gain. But as the acharyas explain, these are like tools, or again, I can't remember which acharya that was. Again, I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, but I can't remember for certain. But he says that they're like during a war or a battle, that the government will give the soldiers various weapons to use in order to fight the battle. But when the battle's over, then they turn all the weapons back in. So the knowledge that we gain or for our spiritual benefit, that ultimately isn't the real knowledge that's spoken about when we speak of the chit feature of the soul. That chit feature of the soul, that knowledge, which is eternal knowledge, is simply that we understand our eternal loving relationship with Krishna. So let's see. So we are engaged in being covered by the Mahamaya within the material world. Every living entity is seeking to fulfill the pleasure potency. So that is fulfilled And our, because our nature is always to serve, and our nature is ultimately to serve Krishna for perfect and pure ultimate gratification, we end up simply serving our senses, which are described as very, very bad masters. And the more we serve our senses, ultimately... All right, hang on, cell phone's going off here. Hold on. You take that, please. Thanks. I'm sorry. So the more we're serving these bad masters, such as lust, desire, anger, avarice, pride, madness, and intolerance, ultimately the more frustrated we become. And we can see practically that we have tried. Krishna gives us such facility to try. We've tried in so many different conditions of life, in so many different species of life, to satisfy ourselves. But the fact is that hunger of the soul, the hunger for loving service to Krishna, never becomes satisfied. And no matter how hard we try, the harder we try, the more frustrated we become. The Krishna's created this material world with so many planets and so many universes, all to give us different ways to try and try this way, try that way, try as a man, try as a woman, try as a dog, try as an insect, try as a demigod, try within the hellish planets, try in Satya Yuga to enjoy in the mode of goodness, try in the Kali Yuga to enjoy in the most abominable types of Rajas Gun and Tamas Gun, always frustrated. The nice example that it's given is like the bird cage, where there's a bird living within the tree. I'm sorry, bird is living within the bird cage, and the owner is polishing and polishing and polishing the cage, making it shiny and beautiful and ornamenting it with different types of jewels, and it's the most beautiful cage imaginable. But what they fail to do is feed the bird within. If the bird within is not fed, then ultimately the bird is dying and always in a miserable state. And that's simply what we've been doing. We've been trying life after life after life to try to satisfy externally the cage in which our soul is living. And that cage is this material body, the mind, and the false ego. But the soul within is dying for want of love of Krishna. So this should be our aim of life, is to now recognize that that by engaging in devotional service to Krishna, of course, beginning with hearing and chanting, then the first time we practically realize that we are getting some taste. Even in our neophyte stage, I have such pleasure on Sundays where I meet with the new people regularly up in Prabhupada's room that come to our Sunday feasts. And I'm seeing many of them, you know, coming back, you know, week after week, month after month. And you can see that the taste is there. And even though we may see them, or even in our own selves, sometimes try to go back to try to enjoy the material nature, once we have had a taste, even the slightest taste of devotional service to Krishna, and we've actually started to feel that hunger within becoming satisfied, you just can't go back. I was speaking this morning to a lady on the West Coast who I'm mentoring, and she's almost finished the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, read so many of other Prabhupada's books. And she just told me this morning that she said one of the books that she really enjoyed, she read many, many times before, was about Seabiscuit, the famous racehorse. I think it was back in the 20s or the 30s or many, many decades ago. And she said, just for the heck of it, she picked it up, and it was like her favorite book, and she started reading it. And she realized, she said, there was just absolutely no taste there at all. And she realized that was the last time she'd ever pick it back up again, once having a taste for spirituality, actually feeling that her hunger for the first time is becoming satisfied. So we should therefore make this our make our whole life's mission to just simply surrender to this process. You know, sometimes we make it so complicated. Prabhupada said that this is, you know, simple for the simple-hearted, but difficult for those who want to make it difficult. It's a very, very simple process to just go ahead and do it. And we look often, I have people come to me who I'm mentoring, and of course I'm mentoring my own self, that we try to make it too complicated. We look for, you know, why can't I surrender? Why can't I surrender? Just like one time someone said to Prabhupada, how do I become sincere? And Prabhupada gave such a simple answer. Just become sincere. It's our free will to surrender to Krishna or not surrender to Krishna. And we simply have to do it. Not a difficult thing. I'll give you a nice example. There was, I don't know how many people are familiar with the jazz scene of the 40s and the 50s and the early part of the 60s, what would be called the bebop era, when the famous jazz musicians were like Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker. Well, anyway, whether you understand or not, there was one very, very famous musician, John Coltrane. And Coltrane, like many musicians of the time, had a problem with narcotics. So he was very addicted to heroin. And at a certain point in his career, he realized that, you know, I've got this. This is ruining my life, ruining my career. I've got to kick this. I've got to kick this habit. So he went into seclusion. And he prayed to God, and he prayed and he prayed to God, and God gave him the strength to give up this terrible habit that he had. So anyway, he became really kind of spiritually inclined, and one of his famous albums was called A Love Supreme, which was basically his offering to God. But anyway, when Coltrane would play, he would get so absorbed in his music, I mean, really, really deeply absorbed, that he would, in jazz, typically the way it's played is the group will play, let's say it's a quartet, so all four will play the basic theme, and then each of the musicians will take a turn, improvising. And so everyone will take a turn, and then they come back, and then they play the basic theme again, and then the song will be over. So in concerts, Coltrane's group, they would plan to play like, you know, five or six songs for the concert, be like a two-hour concert. But what was happening is Coltrane would play, and he'd take the first solo. He'd start playing and playing and playing and playing. He got so absorbed in what he was playing, and he would just... he would play for like, he play the whole concert. No one else would have a chance to play a solo, and they'd only play one song. And it was happening in more than one occasion. He'd just get so locked in to being absorbed in what he was playing that he couldn't draw himself back from his meditation upon what he was doing. So the musicians didn't know how to handle this problem, because he was just, you know, totally absorbed. So they went to many different famous musicians of the time, Dizzy Gillespie was one, and they gave a very, very, tried to give him a very complicated way in which he could bring himself back into sort of external consciousness. But nothing worked, and they talked to many different musicians. Nothing was working. So finally, they went to Miles Davis. Miles Davis was incredibly famous a trumpet player. But anyway, I love the answer that Miles gave. Miles Davis solved the problem for him, and he did it with, I think, something like 7 words in about 4 seconds. I guess you're ready to hear this one. Miles said to Coltrane, he said, "Man, just take the horn out of your mouth." Simple. In other words, don't be so concerned about this, that, and the other. Just take the horn out of your mouth. So in the same way, how do we surrender to Krishna? Just surrender to Krishna. Just take our simple processes that Prabhupada has given us, the chanting of our 16 rounds, following the 4 principles, associating with devotees, and just completely absorb ourselves. Because once having had a taste of this sweetness, true sweetness, then, you know, what more is there to be gained? The sweetness that the devotee feels is actually described in the Shastra. What's that verse? Gopika darshani krishnariye anandahoy tatahoiti koti guna gopi asvadoy. That the pleasure that Krishna is experiencing, gopika darshani, krishnariye anandahoy. So the pleasure that Krishna is experiencing when he sees the gopis is that anandahoy, that pleasure that becomes manifest is absolutely, totally, 100% inconceivable how much pleasure Krishna gets from seeing the gopis. Tata hoite koti guna gopi asvadoy. But gopi asvadoy, that the pleasure that the gopis experience seeing Krishna is described gopika darshani krishna tata hoite koti guna. Koti guna means is like hundreds of millions times greater than the pleasure that Krishna is experiencing, which is, of course, why Krishna came as Lord Chaitanya to taste the incredible nectar that the devotees are tasting. So anyway, our constitutional position is to taste nectar, but we've been tasting it the wrong way. We've been tasting it through the external energy and being completely frustrated and miserable. And if we'll simply turn and have a taste of the internal energy of Krishna, Atak Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhaveng Grayam Indriyai Sevan Mukha Hijiva Dao Svayameva Sparatyataha. Our first taste of Krishna will come through the holy name of Krishna and through tasting prasadam. It's actually tasted through the tongue. So anyway, these are some basic points of the verse. I'm sorry I didn't have any time to prepare, but I think it's about time now to open it up, and maybe someone else can help me out here with some more nectar to throw in.
Okay, so Prabhu, if you have any questions or comments for Narahari Prabhu, thank you so much, Prabhu, for just stepping in like this. We can tell that you are a seasoned preacher.
Yeah, you did a good job, Narahari, for just off the top.
No, I have a question.
Okay.
In the purport, as you mentioned, you know, it says here that we are serving our senses, you know, lust, desire, anger, avarice, pride, madness, and all of them. Of course, the recommendation, the instructions are come to from previous conditioning, you know, we get lust, we get the desire and all these things, that the way to stop it is not by satisfying it, like, you know, putting it in fire, but stop it. When we talk about pride, madness, anger is I mean, I can understand, you know, if you have this flare up of anger and then you don't continue to satisfy anger, rather practice calmness, or if anything that happens to where it requires tolerance, you don't become intolerant, you practice. But I wanted to ask you about pride and madness. I mean, certainly I still get covered by all of these things. But for instance, how would you subdue pride and how would you subdue madness?
Well, okay. Well, first of all, you broke up a lot in your question, so I didn't really hear everything. But I kind of think I know what you were asking. Am I being heard clearly? Am I breaking it up at all?
You're fine.
Oh, okay. Well, so far as these types of things like lust, anger, greed, et cetera, there's really, my understanding is there's kind of twofold things are going on. On the one hand, you know, vacha vegam anasakroda vegam jiva vegam udropasta vegam etan vegan yo vishaheta dirat sarvana timam prativinsa shishat. So this verse is describing that we have to tolerate certain urges that are coming within, that certain things that you just have to tolerate them and not act on them. Just like, for example, the thought of lust may come into the mind. That thought is there, and we can either you know, meditate on it. I was talking with Dan Mohan the other day. He had a neat way of looking at it. It's kind of like a microscope. You know, you can, if something's a little out of focus, you either, something like the, say the desire for sex comes into the mind, a little out of focus, you can either throw it more out of focus or you can bring it into focus. And so, you know, how are we going to deal with it? So many of these things, we just have to tolerate them. They're coming in. Apuryamanam achalapratishtam, Krishna describes, samudramam pravashanti avat, tavat kamangang pravashanti sarve, sashantim apnoti nakamakami. Krishna gives the example that desire, it's natural that desires will come. Just as desires are, just as rivers are entering to the ocean, but the ocean is ever being filled, we have to tolerate these desires and all these different things that you're mentioning, they're coming in, we simply tolerate them. And not sashantam apnoti nakamakami. Then Krishna says, sashantam, that he becomes peaceful. Sashantam apnoti nakamakami, not one who tries to satisfy these things. At the same time, that there are natural outlets for these as well. Now, you're mentioning pride, for example. There are things we can be very proud of. We can be proud of our spiritual master. We can be proud of our society, ISKCON, with all of its, you know, of faults in the growing stage. We can be proud of our service. I mean, there's so much that we can be proud of, and there's nothing wrong with that. There are certainly vents for anger, but we got to be careful with that one. But there are vents for anger. I mean, that's normal. If a devotee, for example, is being attacked or what have you, we can become angry. If someone is trying to create a disturbance against our movement, there is anger. And we can become angry with ourselves if we find ourselves falling short of what we know we should have done, but we didn't do it. Our intelligence can become angry with our own self. So we have to see that really both are happening. You know, some of the things we tolerate and others we have to learn at the same time how to express them in a healthy and natural way. So far as madness is concerned, we're already mad. We're already mad within this material world. We're still mad after sense gratification. We're still mad and identifying with our physical body. We are still already mad with false ego. So we want to purify that by becoming mad after Krishna. So madness is also natural. So we tolerate the bad madness and we want to become mad.
We want to become mad.
in the perfect and the purified spiritual sense, if that helps. Any other questions or someone else like to help me out here?
I got
something. All right, it's Pushkar. Can I say something?
Jai Prabhuji.
Anyone here?
Yes.
All right. during like the last months of Prabhupada, maybe not the very end. Oh. Is that train?
Yeah.
Subway or something, man? What's going on? Ocean rushing in here. during the last few months in Vrindavan, you were talking about Coltrane. His wife was, of course, he died probably before that, but his wife, Alice Coltrane, she was there for weeks wearing a sari, like, and coming to see, you know, Prabhupada was in his room, but she would go in and see him, and she was a regular devotee. I don't know if she left her body, and she probably did by now, but she was a regular devotee practically, coming to the programs and living in the Krishna Ballroom guest house. So, like, all his, whatever he did, somehow ended up that his wife became, a devotee. I mean, I don't know if everyone knows that, but she was some kind of mystic.
I do. There's many churches, especially in the black community, in the cities, that are inspired by Coltrane. And they, I don't know how pure, I don't know a lot about them, but they play a lot of Coltrane's music, and they speak about that as being God inspired, you know, which certainly isn't a bad thing.
Right. I was going to say, you were hitting on the head of that verse. I think it's the first verse in, it's Sanatana Goswami's teaching 21 or one of those in Majja, end of Majja Lila, Yoganamatam Bhuvanam Dayalava Logyan Apyakaro Pramatan. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the whole world is mad, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, out of mercy, Dayalora, has come to make them mad with love of God. So, you know, pretty much, if we're not mad materially, I mean, if we're not mad spiritually, having taken up Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's call, then we have to be mad, just like probably just to quote the man in the court, the court psychiatrist, when they were trying to plead that this one murderer was mad, they asked the court psychiatrist, and he reported that, Your Lordship, that if you want to say that he's mad, that's all right, but as far as I studied, every man is a madman, you know. So, but so that verse is nice. Yoganamatam. They're mad with Gan. In other words, their minds are just speculating everywhere. Yoganamatam bhuvanam, everywhere, all over the universe. Bhuvanam dialogamak. So he, to subdue that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made them mad with love of God. It's the first verse, one of those Krishnas Kaviraj verses. Beautiful.
Yeah, very sweet.
Prema Sampat. I can't remember the rest of it. Just like Prabhupada used to say, because he lived on the Bowery, that he'd see the bums go and they'd watch somebody's window and try to get a few cents to get another bottle of cheap wine. He said, so we have to become like those bums, you know, get another taste. We want to get another taste of Krishna consciousness. No matter what, we have to do, beg, borrow, or steal, but be addicted to the holy name.
Lord Chaitanya demonstrated in the whole Anchalila, the whole last part of his life in Puri, he demonstrated madness. He was a madman.
Right. There's 10 types of madness, Divyanmada, and they're all described in the 47th chapter, 10th canto, with the Song of the Bumblebee, where Radharani is when Uddhava visited Vrindavan to convey message of Krishna. Immediately this bee was flying around, and Radharani was speaking with the bee, and she was, each of 10 verses describe one separate type of mad speaking, which are like, you know, and then Vishnath Chakravarti relates that to the various types of madness. Divyan Mada means divine madness, from Ujjvala Nilamani. And you know, this Pati Jalpa, this regular Prajalpa, like we know it, is just talking nonsense. But in the spiritual world, apparently they've got much better Prajalpa. They speak 10 types of Prajalpa, you know, Ati Jalpa, Prajalpa, this Abhi Jalpa, and all these types of Jalpa. It's mad, you know, and they're slightly different. Like Radharani's thing. Oh yeah, Krishna doesn't love us anyway, and he's enjoying different moods, slightly different. That the ladies of Mathura, maybe he should just stay with them. But then again, doesn't he always think of us? Didn't he explain to them what we used to do and how we used to satisfy him? Don't they know that? And there's different subtle 10 types to these types of speaking. So madness is definitely something we're aspiring for.
Can I add some to this conference?
Please, please, please.
Okay, it's a fantastic purport. Just a fantastic report. Material satisfaction versus spiritual satisfaction. And I missed, because of a call, your early part of the beginning. But I don't know if the famous Rolling Stone song was mentioned, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. But the guy that wrote that, if you listen to the lyrics, part of it is he can't get no girly action. So there's so many living entities, so many human beings that are trying to fulfill desires, but they're failing at that. And so that's one type of misery, in this material world. And so then most every one of them is trying to fill this empty feeling they have inside by consuming things, especially food, sex, wealth, fame, intoxication. And the results of this are obvious, rampant obesity. These people are miserable. Anger, when lust is not satisfied. In fact, we understand from Guru and Shastra that the more you try to satisfy lust, it's like feeding a fire. The itch turns into a rash. Crimes of passion. There's so many. That Amy Winehouse, she just died at 27 from some drug overdose. And so did Janis Joplin. And so did Jimi Hendrix. And so did Jim Morrison. These people have unlimited, they have fame, they have wealth, they have, all the sex they want, all the intoxication they want, and they're miserable. So actually, almost everyone in Kali Yuga is insane, madly trying to become happy in a temporary world where old age, disease, death, they're all lurking in the shadows. What to speak of the uncertainties that are the results of our karma, where wealth comes and goes, and our quota of happiness and distress is coming to us from our karma, from a past life, no matter what we do. So it's a situation where even the devotees that understand the basic philosophy know that they have to tolerate so many things in the material world. And for someone to try to establish themselves here, to try to become permanently happy here, is a type of madness. Srila Shirmaj once expressed it like a homeless person, in a city like New York, chasing around colored paper blowing in the wind in the street. It's all phantasmagoria, wild goose chasing. And one devotee on a morning walk, I was listening to a recording where one devotee was making the point with Prabhupada that there is some sort of pleasure, some sort of happiness in this world. And he gave the example of sex life. And Srila Prabhupada just responded by saying that was ignorance, because the effects of such activity ends up in suffering. So the devotees, they're the sane section. They're the sober section. In the words of Srila Shirmaj, they're the normal thinkers, whereas the materialists, they're the abnormal thinkers.
Thank you, Prabhu. It's nice it said that the denizens of heaven, that they were aspiring so much after the opulences that the king had, but the king gave it up like nothing, just like the Goswamis. So many examples were there. They gave up all of their opulences, unattached at all. Just like, who was the king who walked away from his whole kingdom, everything, just like one passes stool and then goes away? Who was that? Somebody help
Pericket.
Me out.
Pericket.
What's it, Pericket?
Yeah.
Where they use a term just like one passes stool?
Yeah.
Okay. So, that's a symptom of when one is starting to advance in spiritual life. It's actually a test we can apply to ourselves individually. to see, is the madness or is the fever, the desire to enjoy this material world, is it really going down? And that's how we can know if we are advancing, that simultaneously two things are happening. Number one, the fever to enjoy the material world drops, and the appetite to come closer to Krishna, that begins to rage. Just like a physician can diagnose whether someone is overcome, say some type of a disease. You know, the appetite comes back and the fever goes down. And when we start seeing that happening to us, that our fever that we've had life after life is literally starting to go away. We're really starting to feel less fever to try to enjoy this material world. And our appetite, we want to really come in here and hear the Bhagavatam, and we really look forward to chanting our rounds in the morning. That's a real sign that we're becoming sober and we're advancing in spiritual life.
And like you said in your class, that this lady got a taste for Bhagavatam, and I think it's in Prabhupada's books, but I know it's been said that once one gets a taste for Bhagavatam, they lose their taste even for the, you know, other parts of the Vedas, what to speak of mundane virtues.
Good point. Great point. Yep. Krishna told Arjuna, Trigunyan Vishyarveda Nishtrigunya Bhavarjuna. The Vedas deal mostly with how to enjoy the material world. Therefore, Nishtrigunya Bhavarjuna, give this up, become transcendental to the goal of the Vedas.
You know, in particular, these books that they publish on a codicil, there's been a couple of them, and I can't read those Puranic stories. They disturb my mind. After reading Bhagavatam, I can't read this stuff. You know, something where somebody's going to get relieved of some simple activity, or somebody's going to get wealth or some material boon from practicing some sort of austerity.
I've never read any of them. I'm not familiar with them. But it's true. Once we get a taste for just heading right to Krishna's lotus feet, and the medicine is pure. It's been, you know, it's coming from the lips of the acharyas. It's so sweet. We're so fortunate. We're so blessed. And I feel so blessed to have all of your association every morning at Bhagavatam. I've got to run. I've got to get on with my activities here. But any final comments or questions?
No, I was just going to say, really, really appreciate you doing like this. I mean, the other day, I at least had some time to, you know, look at the purport like that, but you just did it right off the bat. It's very, very nice of you to be flexible like this. Thank you very much.
Well, I just figured, you know, Krishna puts us in certain situations, and we just got to, whether we do good or don't do good, it doesn't matter. I mean, ultimately, as long as we're, your heart's in the right place, we're not attached to whether we give a great class or a not so great class. I mean, ultimately, just Krishna put us in the situation, so whether I had time to prepare or not prepare, just, all right, Krishna, if you want me to do it, we'll do it.
Thank you, Dr. Madhava. Very nice example that you gave, comment. I also want to very much thank Pushkar. That was fantastic. I had never heard that example that Srila Prabhupada said, just like a drunk, you have to get any little bit of nectar, get a taste. That is such a fantastic example. My goodness.
In his purport, in the Bhagavad Gita, the verse, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajitam pratipurvakam dadami buddha yogam tam yenamam upayantite. You know, one who's constantly devoted and worshiped me, I give the intelligence by which he can come to me. So Prabhupada says in that purport, he says, just like one, just like a little drunkard becomes a big drunkard. So in the same way, we become, you know, a big devotee by Krishna's encouragement, and from within, Krishna directing us from within, we become mad after Krishna.
I thought it's such
drunkards.
I thought such an excellent example because they don't care how they dress. They don't. They've lost their family. They lost their job. They're on the street. They're hungry. It doesn't. They just get a few pennies to get the taste of some wine. That's what we have to be like for Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Perfect example. Anyway, thank you very much, Narahari Prabhu.
All right. Thank you, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.